Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, a complete recovery, for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chazdai, Pesach Vansir, Rab Meir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, you know, one part of YouTube and of the internet that we want very much to influence is the Jewish campaign for Ted Cruz. We want to convince Jews to support Ted Cruz for president. It's one of the things that our organization has set as a goal. And if you go to YouTube, you'll see that we're already achieving quite a bit. We're already accomplishing quite a bit. YouTube is the main vehicle for political videos. And if you go to YouTube and you look at Ted Cruz Jews, you just type in on the search engine on top, Ted Cruz Jews, you'll see that the number one video there is our video from JTF. And you'll see that 10 out of the 20 videos on page one, because you usually have 20 videos listed on page one of the search, 10 out of the 20 top videos on Ted Cruz, on the subject Ted Cruz Jews, 10 out of the 20 are JTF videos. The number one video is ours. Number one on the list is ours. And 10 out of the 20 top ones are ours. And if you type in Jews for Cruz, it's even more impressive. Again, the top video is ours. And 12 out of the 20 top videos are JTF videos. Now, what does this mean in practical terms? It means that if someone is interested in seeing what Ted Cruz is saying about Jewish issues, like Israel, if someone's interested in searching that, they're going to come to us. They're going to come to JTF. And JTF becomes a major voice in presenting the reasons why Jews should support Cruz and in presenting the pro-Israel point of view in the presidential campaign. In other words, we become a major player, a major voice for the pro-Israel point of view in the presidential campaign. And if Ted Cruz himself wants to search on YouTube, which I'm sure he does on a regular basis, candidates always go and search on YouTube and elsewhere to see what people are saying about them. If Ted Cruz himself searches on YouTube to see the latest of what's being said about him, what videos are being put up about him, if he looks, he's going to see that when it comes to Jewish issues, which is a major part of his campaign, he's focusing a major part of his campaign on Israel. He always speaks about Israel. He always puts Israel into, he always introduces Israel into his speeches and into his interviews and his appearances. And every time he mentions Israel, the supporters of Ted Cruz give the biggest applause and the biggest standing ovations to him when he says that we have to support Israel, or when he makes pro-Israel statements. In any event, Ted Cruz, when he searches on that in YouTube, he's going to see us. He'll see our videos, he'll see our message, he'll see what we're saying should be the pro-Israel approach. And I'm sure he's already seen it, because I'm sure he searches several times a week to see, let's see what they're saying about me on YouTube. All the candidates do. So Ted Cruz and his staff are being exposed to the JTF point of view, the JTF pro-Israel point of view. Now, the other presidential candidates, of course, are exposed less because, let's say you're Scott Walker or Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or one of the other candidates. You're not going to type in Ted Cruz Jews or Jews for Cruz, you're going to type in something involving your own name and your candidacy. So they're not as exposed to us right now. But if Ted Cruz gains momentum and becomes a powerful force, and certainly if he gets, God willing, the Republican nomination, you're going to see huge numbers of people looking and searching and trying to find what Ted Cruz's positions are on these issues. And when they want to search and see, whether it's the news media or candidates or important people, when they want to see what do pro-Israel supporters of Cruz think? What are pro-Israel supporters of Cruz saying? What is the pro-Israel Jewish campaign for Cruz about? What are they saying? How are they approaching this? When they want to search that, they're going to find us. That's the important thing. Ted Cruz himself sees us there now. His staff, every time they look this up on YouTube, they're going to see us, and they look it up believe me, they go to YouTube every day or so to see what the latest is. So they see it, Ted Cruz sees it, his staff sees it, the news media, when they're interested in looking something up, they're going to see it. Israeli media, when they're interested in researching, they're going to see it. Now, the regular news media and the Israeli media, their interest in Cruz will grow if his campaign is successful. But I just want you to know, if his campaign is successful, we already are a major force in terms of presenting the pro-Israel argument for Cruz and the Jewish argument for Cruz. We are already a major element there, because our videos are already dominating. Again, 10 out of the 20 main videos on the subject of Ted Cruz Jews are our videos, including the number one video on that list. And 12 out of the 20, if you look for Jews for Cruz, are our videos, including the number one video on that list. In terms of sheer numbers, we did a video, for instance, on Ted Cruz appearing on the Jay Leno show. And the response that he got even on the Jay Leno show from the audience there, which tends to be a left-wing audience, that video got over 30,000 views. We did a video, a more recent video, a short while back on Ted Cruz speaking about Iran. And we said that Jews, you have to be, I forgot exactly the exact language we used, but after you see this, we said, Jews, after you see this, if you don't support Cruz, you're insane. That was the title of the video. That video has almost 10,000 views. And that's just the main video that we're putting up. Other people and other sites and are putting up our videos as well elsewhere, getting more views. Plus, the videos are on Facebook, which is separate views, which gets us separate extra views. Plus, we have a Ted Cruz Twitter page, which has thousands of people coming to it on a regular basis and thousands of views. So you add it all up, and the Jewish campaign for Ted Cruz and the pro-Israel campaign for Ted Cruz is already looking impressive. It's already an impressive campaign. And that's how these things work. Believe me, that's how these things work. I mean, these candidates and their staff do look up what people are saying about them on YouTube. And if they see this huge presence of JTF whenever the Jewish part of Ted Cruz's campaign comes up in these videos or on videos, that's something that can have quite an impact. So I think we can influence the presidential campaign. Now, of course, if Ted Cruz loses and it, God forbid, and it doesn't go anywhere, then okay. Then at least our videos are still up there. We still influence people who saw them with our pro-Israel point of view and our view of what pro-Israel means. So certainly was not a waste. We still had an impact. And the videos stay up there. And then we have to move on and make some new decisions if Ted Cruz, God forbid, loses the nomination. If he wins, then the potential for us to influence the pro-Israel side of the debate here, the potential is very good. So, or at least I think we have a good potential of doing that, because I know that this is what people search for and that this is how campaigns work and this is how politics in America works. Just wanted you to know that I think we're making progress. Of course, we want to escalate this. We want to step this up as much as possible. And we want to be the dominant pro-Israel force for Ted Cruz, the dominant Jewish voice for Ted Cruz, not allow some of the other voices that are out there who are, some of them are bad people, like Shmuley Boteach, that animal who supports so-called gay marriage. He also hosts Ted Cruz and is given awards to Ted Cruz, and he wants to be one of the Jewish voices. We don't want him to be the Jewish voice. We want to make sure that a true pro-Israel, moral, Torah-true voice is, and when we say the pro-Israel voice, that would include also the evangelical Christians and Gentile voices for him. We want to make sure a true coalition of people who are uncompromising on the land of Israel are the voices that he hears. And I think we are already influencing what he's saying about Iran. Because he never said before that he was going to take military action. He was just saying that we have to increase the sanctions. That was all he said. That's all the other candidates ever say. He is now saying that if we're going to tell Iran that if they don't take down their nuclear program, we're going to take it down for them. So I have a feeling, I can't prove it, but I have a feeling that we're already influencing things to a certain degree, because he sees the pro-Israel Jewish element saying that, that that's what you should be standing for. I think we're already influencing things in that respect. I saw this happen in the races for the Knesset in Israel, where we were influencing what candidates on the right, the candidates who pretended to be on the right, nobody's ran for the Knesset was truly right-wing. But I do think we were influencing what candidates who pretend to be right-wing were saying in that campaign for the Knesset, the recent campaign for the Knesset. Because again, they would look up, they'd look their name up, or they'd look up videos on YouTube, because that's also, YouTube also heavily influences Israeli politics. And they'd see our Hebrew videos, and I think it had an impact. I think it had an impact. And we got large numbers of views for many of our videos there involving the Israeli campaign. By the way, in Israel, our Facebook and news page views are growing. The number of Israelis that come to us and are seeing us, it's growing by the week. And that's because of the great work that our people in Israel are doing. Just fantastic work. And I'm very happy to say that the number of people coming to our news page every day, our Hebrew news page, the number of people coming to our Facebook page, and everything that we're doing in terms of the Hebrew movement is growing in Israel as well. Baruch Hashem, thank God. And I even see, you know, the increased pressure on Naftali Bennett and the Jewish Home Party. You know, we've been attacking him for his sellout policies, and he is a big sellout. He's a big phony, just like Netanyahu. Now, all of a sudden, he's saying, we're going to demand an end to the freeze on Jewish building in Judea and Samaria. We're going to then demand an end to expelling Jews in Judea and Samaria. Hey, for 6 years, he never said that. All of a sudden, he's saying that now? For 6 years, he never said that. So I think he realizes that he's paying a price for the fact that he sold out the Jews in Judea and Samaria. Of course, they're stupid if they continue to support that phony. But he's trying now to get their support again. And so he's saying, he claims that he's demanding from Netanyahu that he stop the freeze in building in Judea and Samaria, and that he stop expelling Jews from Judea and Samaria. Look, we're putting the pressure on. We're going to keep the pressure on. We're not going to be silent. We're going to try to back up the Jews in Judea and Samaria and prevent Jews from getting thrown out of their homes and Jews from being expelled. We're doing our best to keep the pressure, to keep the heat on and keep the pressure going on that. And I think, to a certain degree, it's succeeding in Israel as well. I believe that. I mean, think of it this way. If you're a politician in Israel, tens of thousands of people are seeing videos attacking you and calling you a phony, a hypocrite, a liar. If tens of thousands of potential voters are seeing that, you know, that's important in Israel. Tens of thousands of voters can mean the difference between, you know, you can lose a couple of Knesset seats if those voters are influenced by our videos. You could wind up losing a couple of Knesset seats, and that for a party like the Jewish Home Party, Abayat HaYehudi in Hebrew, the Jewish Home Party of Naftali Bennett, for them, a couple of seats is important. In fact, even to the Likud, a couple of seats is important. Now, is it enough? Of course, everything we're doing is not even the beginning. It doesn't even scratch the surface of what we want to do. We want to have a much bigger influence. But I do think we're having some impact. I really do. I really do. Baruch Hashem. And of course, I want this to be much bigger. I want to have a much bigger influence. Just wanted to share that with our great JTFers. Just wanted you to know that I do think we're starting to have an impact. And by the way, as far as Ted Cruz and the campaign for the Republican presidential nomination and pro-Israel videos and Jewish videos in general that involve the campaign, you know, we're in July now. We're in the beginning of July, and the first caucus is in February, is in early February in Iowa. So we're roughly 7 months away from the first caucus, about 7 months to go. And already look at what we're doing. Already look at this. I can assure you that as we get closer, God willing, I shouldn't say I can assure you, God willing, if Hashem wants to help us with this, but it would make sense that as we get closer, more people will be interested in the presidential campaign as we get closer to the actual voting, and more people will be interested in these issues as we get closer to the actual voting. And so it would seem to be that whatever we're doing now is just going to grow and our influence is going to grow, and our views are going to grow, and our ability to influence the debate will grow, God willing. God willing. How can you help? Well, you know that even though I think that's what I'm telling you now is some good news, a measure of good news, it's not even nearly enough for what's needed, as you know. You know that they're coming close, God forbid, to this terrible agreement with Muslim Nazi terrorist Iran, which will enable Iran, God forbid, to develop nuclear bombs. We're in a very dangerous situation here. And so in order to have the impact and the influence that we want to have, we'd like to have a candidate like Ted Cruz elected president in 2017. He can undo any agreement that they make with Iran. And if Iran hasn't developed nuclear bombs by then, God willing, I hope not, Ted Cruz can take action. Or whoever else is the president can take action. So we're trying to influence things. We're trying to prevent catastrophe here from taking place. We're not allowed to be silent. We're fighting day and night, doing everything we can to have an impact. And if we work together as a team, JTF, hopefully we can have a big impact. Hopefully, if we work together as a team. And I know you understand how important that is. And so we ask you to help us. There are four things I want to ask you to do to help us. Number one, we need your prayers. Please pray that we succeed in everything we're trying to do here. Secondly, when you see us put up Hebrew and/or English videos, if you see us put up Hebrew or English videos, please like, comment, favorite, do everything you can to promote those videos, share. Do everything you can to promote those videos both on Facebook and on YouTube. Whatever you're doing with the videos, whether it's on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, it helps. It helps. We've got to get the word out. We've got to reach as many people. The more people we reach, the better the situation. And the third thing is our news pages. Our news pages, whether in Hebrew, if you speak Hebrew, help us with the Hebrew news page. Go on there, comment, participate, make sure you check it every day. If you don't speak Hebrew, then at least the English news page. The Hebrew news page, by the way, is hayamin.org. The English news page is jtf.org. Go on the news page. If you only speak English, then go on the English news page. Comment on the English news page. Participate. Spread the word about the English news page. And check it for news all the time. You can check it a couple of times a day because the news page is constantly coming up with very important news that you won't see anywhere else. Shlomo is doing a great job there, of course. And the fourth and final thing, the three things we said in the beginning, well, we need your prayers, we need you to help us with the Hebrew and English videos, we want you to participate and strengthen our news pages. The fourth thing, of course, is the most important of all. Checks, money orders, and cash donations that are sent to our post office box make a big difference. Every donation makes a big difference. Obviously, the more money we have, the more people we can reach, the stronger we are. The stronger we are, the more people we reach, and the stronger our message is in terms of helping Israel. So, we need your help. God bless the great JTFers that have been on a regular basis sending us checks, money orders, cash donations. It makes a difference. It's making a difference. We need your help now more than ever. If you prefer, for convenience sake, to donate online with your credit card, you can do that as well. You can go to the donate button on the Hebrew main page. On the Hebrew main page on top, there's a donate button in English. You click on the donate button. In a couple of minutes, you can very conveniently donate to our cause online with PayPal. It doesn't make a difference, by the way. Sometimes people ask me, what would you prefer if people send it to the post office box or do the donation online? To us, it makes no difference at all. Whatever you feel is more convenient for you is fine with us. It makes no difference at all to us. We need your help. We've got to fight together as a team. I think we're already accomplishing something. It's not nearly enough. You see all the challenges, all the dangers that are going on with the Iran negotiations and everything else. You see how Ted Cruz is fighting uphill to try to win the Republican nomination, but he's getting more attention lately, and I think he's starting to gain some momentum. You see all the challenges, the very difficult challenges. You see us fighting against the odds. You know how important this is, but at least you know with us, I think we're beginning to have an impact again, and I think we have a chance to make a difference, God willing. So join with us. Let's fight together as a team, and let's make a difference to make this a better world, God willing. Now let's go to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with the question from Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what do dreams really tell you?" Unquote. Well, dreams can tell you a number of things. First of all, there are people who can sometimes see the future in dreams. Sometimes you dream something and it comes true. And there is that ability sometimes, that intuitive ability that your soul has to sometimes actually see things that will occur, or to tell you about things, to tell you about things that it's hard for you to discern when you're awake. So dreams can tell us, can give us important messages sometimes. But of course, many times dreams are just a reflection of what we were thinking about during the day, or a reflection of our thoughts in general, and may not have any particular meaning. Sometimes they may not, but sometimes they can. You don't have to be a prophet. You don't have to be a prophet to dream something and then that dream eventually comes true. It is possible. So dreams do have significance. We do believe dreams have significance. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. And we go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, can you give us an update about what is happening with the Hilltop Youth? Thanks," unquote. Well, you know, there's an ongoing struggle that is always taking place. That evil traitor animal, Moshe Bugi Yalon, who is the so-called defense minister of Israel, Shem Reshaim Yerikav, may the name of the wicked rot, this filthy, self-hating traitor, this swine, who said recently that he just longs for the day when they'll have homosexual marriages in Israel. That's the Likud defense minister. He wants homosexual marriages in Israel. He throws Jews out of their homes in Judea and Samaria. And many of the people thrown out of their homes, of course, when these things happen, are Hilltop Youth. Hundreds of Jews have been thrown out of their homes during the time that Bibi Netanyahu and Moshe Yalon and the Likud and Naftali Bennett have been in office during the past 6 years. Hundreds of Jews have been thrown out of their homes. So there's a constant battle going on there. We try to back the Jews up as much as we can. As I mentioned in my opening, I think we're already influencing Naftali Bennett to a certain degree, because he's now saying he's against any more expulsions, and he never spoke up before about this issue. And he's now speaking up about the freeze on Jewish building in Judea and Samaria, which he never spoke up about for 6 years. He was in government, never said a thing about it, didn't care about it. All of a sudden, he's speaking up about it. I think the pressure that we're putting on them is having somewhat of effect. It's not nearly enough, by the way. It's not nearly enough. We need to have much more influence. But I think we have somewhat of an impact. Because, you know, again, if you have videos attacking you, we're attacking these politicians that are throwing Jews out of their homes. We're attacking all these people. And if you have people calling you names on videos and attacking you all the time and convincing voters that what you're doing is bad, you know, that creates political pressure on politicians. And that's what we're trying to do. So we want to support the people in the Hilltop communities in Judea and Samaria. We want to do everything we can to back them up. And they are fighting a heroic battle because, again, the more Jews that are in Judea and Samaria, the more Jews especially that are in the remote areas of Judea and Samaria, the less chance there is that Israel will accept the creation of a so-called Palestinian state, which would be national suicide for Israel, God forbid. And the danger of Israel creating a Palestinian state is very, very real. Of that eventually happening, the danger is very real. So we've got to fight this ongoing battle. We've got to constantly fight this ongoing battle. Thank you, Joe. We go now to Lewinsky Stinks, who writes, and I quote, Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "Even most young, quote, conservatives, unquote, are for sodomite marriage, quote, unquote. Rank and file GOPers are rhinos." Okay, well, let me start off with the sodomite marriage issue. I think many young Republicans say that they're for it. I don't think the true conservatives, of course, are for it. And you put conservatives in quotes. We have a tough fight ahead of us, Lewinsky Stinks. You're absolutely right. We have a tough battle ahead of us. People don't care about the Bible. They don't care about what God says anymore. Even young people who call themselves Christians in many cases are disregarding what God says in the Bible. So we have to bring... And you know why? Because nobody tells the truth. There's nobody out there telling the truth. I think Ted Cruz tells the truth. I think Ted Cruz is a very eloquent, articulate voice for truth. If we could get him, if we could really get his candidacy to be successful and to promote his candidacy, I think you would see more and more people recognizing the truth and understanding the truth and not buying the establishment line. So that's one of the things we try to do. And of course, we want to influence things aside from supporting Ted Cruz. We want to influence issues like sodomite marriage issue as well. We got to do our best, Lewinsky thinks. We can't be silent. We live in a generation that is evil. And that is what it was predicted it would be before the final redemption, that evil would reign in the world and this would be a very evil time. And so we're seeing that. We're seeing that reflected. But we're not allowed to be silent. We've got to do everything we can to fight against it. Lewinsky stinks now writes, rank-and-file GOPers are rhinos, unquote. Absolutely. That's absolutely true. So we've got to convince as many Republicans as possible to wake up. We've got to wake them up because right now they're brainwashed. Right now they're brainwashed and they are rhinos. Rhinos means Republican in name only. No question about it. No question about it. Lewinsky stinks now writes, would Huckabee have won in 08 if not for Larry Flynt? Unquote. Who do you mean by Larry Flynt? You mean Thompson? You mean Senator Thompson from Tennessee? I think that's who you're referring to. If that's who you're referring to, then I think he would have won the South Carolina primary. I don't know if he would have won the nomination, but I think he would have beaten, he certainly would have beaten John McCain in the South Carolina primary. John McCain beat him in South Carolina by 3% of the vote because Huckabee, Romney, Thompson, all of these guys were splitting the anti-McCain vote, the so-called conservative vote. Of course, Romney's not a conservative, but he pretended to be one in 2008. He was pretending to be a conservative. And Thompson was pretending to be a conservative. So I think if that's who you're referring to, I think he would have won, at least would have won the South Carolina primary, and possibly we could have stopped McCain from getting the nomination. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. We go now to Truth Seeker, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of Jackie Mason? Okay. Unquote. Jackie Mason is someone that I've met him a couple of times. I know him personally. Unfortunately, he made promises to us and broke those promises. He's not a man who's honest and who keeps his word. He promised he was going to do fundraising. He promised he was going to devote either a couple of shows to us and give us the money from it, because he claimed to agree with JTF. He promised to when he had a Broadway show that he was going to give us the whatever profit he made on a couple of nights of his show to JTF. He also promised to do. He also said at one point that he would make himself available to us and do a show for us free of charge. And then when we called up his agent, when I called up his agent, after I typed up he asked me to type up a thing, and we did a beautiful, you know, a beautiful 2 or 3 page summary explaining what we're about and explaining what the help we want from him, beautiful cover letter, which he requested. We did all of that, and she said, get in touch with us in December. This was a number of years ago. Get in touch with us in December, because right now he's very busy preparing the Broadway show. He was doing a Broadway show at the time. And we got in touch in December, and she acted like she didn't know who I was after all this. So, you know, what can I tell you? They're not... The way they treated us, the way they acted toward us, is not the way that an honest person or a decent person would act toward us. So he's a big disappointment as far as I'm concerned. Thank you, Truth Seeker. We go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, one, should the white Nazi that killed the blacks in the South Carolina church get the death penalty, unquote? Absolutely should. Absolutely should. He is a Nazi. He's been involved with Nazis, and he absolutely should get the death penalty. Benjamin now writes, too, speak about blacks that go from car to car on the New York City subway soliciting or trying to sell things, unquote. Well, this is something I've spoken about many times. It's one of the more annoying quality of life aspects of traveling on the subway in New York City. Rudy Giuliani, to his credit, did order the police to put an end to this, and there was very little of this when Giuliani was mayor. He cut down on it drastically. But of course, Mike Bloomberg became more lenient, and so it came back. And now with the communist mayor that we have now, Bill de Blasio, it's coming back in full force. When this type of harassment, the squeegee men, people on the subway harassing you for money, people begging on the streets, people jumping the turnstiles to get into the subway for free, if you allow these quality of life crimes, graffiti artists, you allow these quality of life crimes to go unpunished, it leads to the big crimes being committed eventually. That was Giuliani's theory, that you crack down on every crime, no matter how little. If someone breaks the law, arrest them, take them in. What happened was a lot of the people they took in for graffiti and for jumping the turnstile on the subway to avoid paying the fare, or for so-called minor offenses, a lot of the people they arrested had outstanding arrest warrants on them for murder and rape and other cases. And when they took them in, they were actually deterring the bigger crimes from taking place. So when you allow black people, black criminals, to go on the subway and engage in this type of behavior, even if it's minor nuisance crimes, like annoying people and harassing people, which is a crime, if you allow them to do that, it does lead to a spike eventually in violent crime, and we're beginning to see that in New York City. Thank you, Benjamin. And we go now to Rashi, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, why did you not make Aliyah in the 70s or early 80s, unquote. Well, first of all, I went to prison in the late 70s for a while, and I was on probation in the early 80s for 5 years. I had a five-year probation term. So, obviously, you can't, when you're on probation, you're not allowed, I wasn't even allowed to leave New York City, let alone go to Israel. And the reason, and before that, in the 70s, the reason that I went to prison, the reason I was on probation, is because of my activities on behalf of Soviet Jewry. So it was my activities on behalf of Soviet Jewry and my activities on behalf of Israel, including bombings that I was involved with, and the legal issues that occurred. And don't forget, in the 70s, I was a teenager in the 70s. And as a teenager, I did those things in order to free Soviet Jews, in order to keep the issue alive and publicize the issue and make sure that Soviet-American relations would be heard. Because of that, I was in a situation where I couldn't make Aliyah. Now, there were brief periods in between. There was one brief period where I could make Aliyah. I got off of probation in 83. In the middle of 1983, I got off of probation. And I wasn't arrested again until 1986. So there was a three-year period there where I was free legally. But during that three-year period, I was going to make, and I planned to make Aliyah then. Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik VeKadosh Livracha, Morenu VeRabenu, our teacher and our leader, our rabbi, met with me. I remember we met at Stern College, and because it's just to find a place to sit down and meet in the classroom there. We went to Stern College, we met, and the rabbi met with me. We sat down and we spoke for several hours. And the rabbi said, we urgently need you to take over the JDL because of the Soviet Jewry situation. I'm very busy with Israel. I can't do it the way I did it in the early 70s. You have to do it. You're the only one who's going to do what has to be done. And we understood what that meant. That meant bombing Soviet diplomatic targets and a violent campaign to free Soviet Jews to make sure the issue would be on the front pages. Rabbi Kahana asked me to do that. He asked me to postpone my Aliyah in order to do that. I told him I wanted to make Aliyah. He said, that's very good, and we want you in Israel. We need you in Israel. But we need you to do this for Soviet Jews right now. Otherwise, they're going to be trapped there, and they're never going to get out. So I took over the JDL. We led this campaign for Soviet Jewry. And, of course, eventually that led to my arrest again, and then I was arrested again. I went to prison. I spent years in prison. Then I spent another five years on probation again after prison, after getting out of prison, on another 5 years on probation. By the time I finished with all of my probation terms, prison terms, everything else, it was already 1996. And that's when I tried to make Aliyah. Finally, I was free of everything. The Soviet Jewry issue had been solved, and I could finally make Aliyah. And I went to Israel to do so, and we all know what happened. I was arrested at the airport, thrown out of the country, and I've been banned from Israel ever since. Rashi now writes, do you think the Islamic State and Hamas will join to attack Israel? Unquote. Yeah, of course. I mean, there always are alliances between Muslim terrorist organizations to destroy Israel, to attack Israel. And I think there'll be times when they'll work together. There'll be times when they'll be fighting each other, and there'll be times when they'll be working together against Israel. That happens on an alternating basis when it comes to the Muslim terrorist Nazis that surround Israel. Thank you, Rashi. And we go now to Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, one, reflections of Kahana's interviews with Gary D., Bob Grant, Larry King, and Ted Koppel, unquote. His interviews with all of these people, his interviews with everybody, his debates, his interviews, his speeches were always the gold standard for Torah Judaism, for true Torah Judaism. And he had everything that we needed in a leader. He was a great rabbi and a Talmid Chacham, a Torah scholar. And he was very, very aware of what's going on, very hip and very aware of what was going on in the world around him as well. He didn't just bury himself in religious books, which is very important, but he was very well aware of what's going on in the world around him as well. So he understood the spiritual needs, and he had the spiritual knowledge that you need to be a true Jewish leader, and he understood what had to be done in the world that surrounds us. And his interviews reflected that. You saw how clever he was, how persuasive he was, how eloquent, how knowledgeable, how witty, just everything about him. What we lost when he was murdered was just unbelievable. And again, it was because of the Likud and the Jewish leaders on the phony right that joined with the left to silence this great voice. What a crime against the Jewish people that was. Dr. Dan now writes, and I quote, two, is Jesse Jackson an anti-Semite? Okay, and Dr. Dan, of course, writes, ha ha, he, of course, is imitating Jesse Jackson's brilliant linguistic skills. Of course Jesse Jackson's an anti-Semite or an anti-Semite. Of course he is. Jesse Jackson said that the Jews are Haimies and New York is Haimie town. When you go to Haimie town, the only thing Haimie want to know is what you think about Israel. Haimie only want to talk about Israel. So he said the Jews only want to talk about Israel. I wish that were true. Oh, I wish that were true. Wouldn't that be wonderful if the Jews were so interested and so concerned about Israel? Of course, he is the only one. All he wants to talk about is his black racist demagogic issues. You know, the nerve of this filthy pig. And of course, you know, he said he's sick and tired of hearing about the Holocaust. He said the Jews are Haimies. He supports Louis Farrakhan. He said that Zionism, which means the very existence of a Jewish state, is a poisonous weed in the Middle East. What do you do with a poisonous weed? You got to pluck the poisonous weed. So he's calling for the destruction of Israel. He is the lowest form of black Nazi filth. And remember, Barack Hussein Obama shares his agenda, agrees with him, supports him. They support each other. As the same thing with Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton supports Jesse Jackson. She supports Jesse Jackson. She supports Al Sharpton. And they support her. So this is what we this is the Democrat Party of today, and this is black leadership today, And this is what the sick, self-hating Jews of America refuse to accept. They refuse to accept reality that most of black America long ago has declared war on the Jewish people. And the Democrat Party has declared war on the Jewish people. And we had better wake up fast before it's too late. Thank you, Dr. Dan. We go now to PMN, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think about Google Photos auto-identifying a pic of two blacks as gorillas?" I'm not sure what you're referring to here. Auto-identifying a pic of two blacks as gorillas. And gorillas, he's not spelling gorillas like the ape gorillas. He's spelling it like the gorillas that are warriors. I'm not sure what you're referring to, PMN. I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. PMN now writes, "Your take on Trump's Mexican remarks and boycotts. Will he run now?" I don't like Donald Trump. I think he's a phony. I think he just likes to get a lot of attention. But what he said about the Mexican illegal aliens that are sneaking into the United States is 100% true. There's no question that many of them are rapists and murderers and drug dealers. It's all true. It's all true. There's no question it's true. When I was in prison, about a third of the people I was in the federal prison system with were illegal aliens. There is no question that they present a tremendous crime problem and that they are not in any way beneficial to American society. It's a catastrophe for America. Let's take note of something important here. Every single Republican candidate that I've seen has been distancing themselves from Trump, or in the case of Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and Rick Perry and these other cowardly, filthy pigs, actually condemning what Trump said about them. In fact, Rick Perry, who in Texas they say Rick Perry is the only person who can make George W. Bush look like a genius. Rick Perry said he was personally offended by Trump's remarks, and so does Jeb Bush say that. Marco Rubio called him every name on the, I mean, just started attacking him, divisive, offensive. I mean, really threw every possible attack word at Trump and at what he said. The only candidate who has defended Trump and has saluted him and has said, "I agree with what he's saying, and it's about time someone spoke up about illegal immigration," has been Ted Cruz. And this is the proof that the only one who will really secure our borders is Ted Cruz. This is the defining issue that shows that the only one who will really oppose amnesty and who will really secure the borders of the United States is Ted Cruz. That proves that conclusively. PMN now writes, will Trump run now? I don't know how long Trump is going to run for president. I don't know how long he'll stay in the race. I don't know. He's not going to get elected president. He's not going to get the Republican nomination. No way. I don't care what the fact that he's suddenly going up in polls. That's temporary. He is not a serious candidate for president. But he's certainly creating an issue here where we're seeing that the only one who is true to principles on the issue of amnesty for illegal aliens, the only one who's on our side on this issue, is Ted Cruz. Thank you, PMN. And we go now to Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "One, how would you handle the natural gas discovered off the coast of Israel?" Unquote. Also, are the companies ripping the people off? Okay. Of course, the monopoly companies that want to monopolize any discoveries of natural gas or of any energy resources in Israel, of course they rip the people of Israel off. I want as much free market competition as possible. I don't want one or two companies monopolizing everything, which is what Netanyahu and the Likud and the rulers of Israel are doing. I want real free market competition. I want small companies all going out there. I want lots of people with drilling rights, all going out, competing, trying to discover more and more sources of energy for Israel. That's what I would want to encourage. I want a true free market with lots of competition, and I want to break up the big monopoly companies that choke off competition and that choke off a true free market. That's what I would do. And that's not what Netanyahu is doing. Tag Mechir Tzedek now writes to ISIS, meaning the Islamic State, in Sinai. By the way, I don't like calling them ISIS. I call them Islamic State. That's their real name, Islamic State. That's what they call themselves, and they're right. That is Islam. What they're doing is Islam. I'm very happy with what they're doing in the Sinai. I think it's wonderful. Of course, if they do anything against Israel or against Jews, if they fire rockets, then Israel has to defend herself. And eventually it could become a threat to Israel. But right now, they're killing Egyptian soldiers. The Egyptian army is responsible for the murder of thousands of Jews in the wars that were fought in the Sinai, and the wars that were fought to destroy Israel. And Egypt remains Israel's very dangerous enemy of Israel. Over 80 million Egyptians on Israel's southern border. They despise Israel and the Jewish people. And so when the Islamic State terrorists are fighting with the Egyptian army, I love it. Muslims killing Muslims. Muslims killing Muslims. When Muslims kill Muslims, it's a lot better than when they go out and kill Jews or kill non-Muslims. They're killing each other. That's a lot better than when they unite to kill us. Thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And we go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, 1. Paris Hilton plane crash prank, unquote. This is a case where an Egyptian pilot or an Egyptian television personality had Paris Hilton on a plane, and they pretended the plane was crashing to scare Paris Hilton. And they really made it look like the plane was about to crash. And she got very frightened. And they, you know, I don't like Paris Hilton. She's a slut. But and she's a complete publicity seeking, phony, disgusting person. But in any event, she got very, you know, that's a very cruel thing to do to somebody, to pretend that the plane is going to crash. That's the type of ethics you have in Egypt. You have Egyptian media personalities, major Egyptian media personalities, television personalities, and Egyptian pilots who will scare people to death pretending they're crashing their plane. I mean, what type of country is this? Can you imagine getting on a plane, you think you're taking a flight, and the pilot and an Egyptian television personality are just about to scare you half to death, pretending that the plane is about to crash? And then they go, ha, 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 ha. I mean, what type of behavior is this? That's Egypt. My family lived there for hundreds of years. They are the cruelest, most vicious people. Just low, cruel, vicious, sadistic people. Smash Islam now writes to Jacob Arabo. Okay. Jacob Arabo, I don't remember what his real name was, but he's the Bukharian Jew who sold jewelry, who was a famous jewelry salesman for the black moron rappers, the black rappers and hip-hop morons and criminals. And he was selling them all the jewelry. And in fact, when he was asked about the anti-Semitism in their rap filth, he defended them. He said, no, they're not anti-Semites. He talked about how great they are, and he made excuses for them and defended them. So he's, of course, scum, and he'll do anything for money. He went to prison, by the way, for money laundering. I don't know what he's doing now. He was in the jewelry business, but eventually he got involved in money laundering. And I know he was sentenced to a couple of years in prison for money laundering. Just scum. That's all I can say. Scum. Smash Islam now writes 3. Was Romania under Ceausescu good for Israel? Unquote. No, of course not. No, of course not. Communist Romania was not good for Israel. Ceausescu supported the PLO murderers, tried to get Israel to negotiate with the PLO murderers, supported, of course, the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat, helped the Arab Hitler Yasser Arafat. The Romanian secret police assisted Arafat, helped train the PLO, gave them other types of assistance. And Ceausescu played a role in the Egypt-Israel talks that led to Israel retreating from the entire Sinai, which was a catastrophe for the Jewish state and the Jewish people. So no, he was not good at all for Israel. Four, again, we're still with Smash Islam. Four, Todor Zivkov, or Zivkov, Todor Zivkov. Todor Zivkov was the communist dictator of Bulgaria for 35 years. He was a Soviet puppet. He did whatever the Soviets did. He was a Stalinist when Stalin was in power. He supported Khrushchev when Khrushchev was in power, Brezhnev when Brezhnev was in power. He was a Soviet puppet for 35 years. An evil person. Five, Belarus dictator Lukashenko, unquote. Okay. He's the current dictator. Lukashenko is the current dictator of Belarus, which is a country, for those of you who don't know, I think about 10 million people. Former Soviet republic, an independent nation. One time, a lot of Jews lived there before the Holocaust. 90% of them were murdered in the Holocaust. And most of the others left eventually. So there aren't many Jews there now, but there used to be a huge Jewish population in Belarus. Lukashenko is continuing to this day the Soviet-style dictatorship. He runs a Soviet communist-type dictatorship there. So it's disgusting. Disgusting. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to Hiram, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, what are some of the left's biggest lies, unquote. Oh, there are so many. You look at the issue of Israel. The claim that there's a Palestinian people, which of course is not true. There's never been a Palestine. There's never been a Palestinian people. The claim that Israel is Goliath and the Arabs are David, when in fact there are 500 million Arab and Iranian Muslims surrounding only 6 million Jews. I mean, the Arabs outnumber the Jews 100 to 1 in population. The Arabs and the Muslims have, the Arabs alone, just the Arab Muslims alone, have 600 times as much territory as tiny Israel. The Muslim world has 3,000 times as much territory. The whole Muslim world has 3,000 times as much territory as tiny Israel. And yet Israel is portrayed as Goliath and the Arabs as David. And I could go on and on. I mean, everything they say is a lie. Everything they do is a lie. They turn the whole world upside down. So, you know, if you want to know what the truth is, it's almost always just the opposite of whatever the left is saying. And Hiram now says, please tell us about the prophet Samuel, unquote. The prophet Samuel, Shmuel HaNavi in Hebrew. Shmuel HaNavi was one of the greatest prophets and one of the greatest human beings ever to live. He is, in fact, actually compared in some cases to Moshe Rabbeinu and Aharon. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aharon are Moses and Aaron. That's how great his influence was and how great his prophecy was. He became a prophet, and for 20 years he went all around Israel, teaching the people of Israel, restoring faith in God, preparing them for the kingdom that was going to come, because they didn't have kings yet. And finally, when the time came, he anointed the first king of Israel, Shaul. Shaul is Saul in English. Shaul was from the tribe of Benjamin. It didn't work out. Shaul's being king didn't work out because he disobeyed God. He allowed the king of the Amalekites to live, and he disobeyed God. But it paved the way for the next king, which was the great king, David HaMelech, King David. And King David, of course, was an unbelievably righteous king, an unbelievably righteous human being. And again, Shmuel HaNavi, Samuel the prophet, the anointed King David, and paved the way for him. And King David, in the end, became such a great king. And, of course, he wrote the book of Psalms. And he contributed so much to Israel and prepared the way for the building of Beit HaMikdash, of the temple, that God promises that from the lineage of King David will come the Messiah, will come the Messiah, and will come the eternal redemption. So all of this was heavily influenced by this great prophet, this wonderful human being, Shmuel Hanabi, Samuel the prophet. And by the way, he showed us how you deal with the Arafats and the Abu Mazens and the Muslim terrorists and all the other. He showed you how you, Shmuel Hanabi, Samuel the prophet, showed you how you deal with them. When the king of the Amalekites was not killed by King Saul, Samuel the prophet, who was an old man by then, killed him himself, took his sword out and killed him on the spot. And showed that you're not allowed to have mercy on the merciless and the cruel, and set the great example for the Jewish people. An example that I wish we would follow today, and that someday we will follow that example again, God willing. Thank you, Hiram. And we go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Jews have more in common with Southern whites than Schwarzes," unquote. Absolutely. Absolutely. Great point, because, you know, the self-hating Jews, the self-hating Jewish leaders are always telling us, we have so much in common with black people, and we're all minorities. They're our fellow minorities. That's what they always used to say when I was a kid. We have to fight for them in the civil rights movement because we're all minorities. All the minorities have to stick together. Yeah. And this is while the blacks, of course, were the most anti-Semitic group in America and still are the most anti-Semitic major group in America. Of course, now the Arabs and the Muslims are becoming a big group in America. There are millions of Arabs and Muslims. So the Schwarzes now have competition in terms of being the most anti-Semitic. But they despise the Jews. We have nothing in common with them. They are lazy and evil and parasitic. And again, there are exceptions. Are there exceptions? Yes. Is it because of the color of their skin? No. It's because they, out of their own free will, have chosen to be jealous, lazy, hateful, vicious people. It's not all of them, but it is certainly a substantial majority. And the Southern whites who believe in the Bible and believe in God, are more pro-Israel than the Jews. What a disgrace. What a disgrace. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we're going to disgrace on the Jews, that the Southern white Gentiles are more pro-Israel than the Jews are for their own people, for their own brothers and sisters in their own land, in their own homeland. And we go now to Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "Why is there always a check-cashing shop in Schwarze neighborhoods?" Unquote. Because the Schwarzes are always getting, of course, their welfare check. "I gotta cash my check so I can buy me my medicine." Their medicine, of course, is heroin, cocaine, crack. You know, they want to buy their medicine from their street corner drug dealer. And so, you know, they need the check cashing place. They don't have bank accounts because they spend every last penny. Even though everything they get is for free. Their rent is paid for free. They live in public housing. Their food is given to them for free. They get food stamps. Everything is given to them for free. Everything. They even get free telephones, free everything. So you would think that when they get a check, on top of getting everything else for free, that they'd be able to save a lot of money. No, no, no. They don't save a single penny. They spend it on drugs. They spend it on booze. They spend it on gambling. They spend it on prostitution. In the end, they have nothing. So that's why you have check cashing shops in Schwarze neighborhoods. And Gimatria says, "What should Bibi do against ISIS?" Unquote. Nothing. They're killing Muslims. Why should he do anything against? If they try to do something against Jews, if they do anything against Jews, then you have to take action. Anytime anybody tries to do anything against Jews, you take action. But right now, the Islamic State, all they're doing is killing Muslims. They're slaughtering Muslims who are also enemies of the Jewish people. And they're showing the whole world what Islam is really all about. Why is that a bad thing? So far, I'm not saying that they won't in the future become a threat. They may become a threat in the future. But right now, what they're doing is positive. They're killing their fellow Muslims. They're showing the world what Islam truly is and showing the Jewish people in Israel what Islam is truly all about. Is that bad? Gimatria now writes, "Is Sinai going to be taken over?" Unquote. Sinai has already been taken over. since the early 1980s by the Egyptian Nazi army. Egypt is our enemy. Egypt is waiting for the day to again attack Israel. They are our enemies. They allowed the terrorist attacks. They allowed the flood of arms to go into Gaza and to murder hundreds of Jews. Hundreds of Jews were murdered because the Egyptian army was allowing tunnels to be built so that arms could flow from Egypt, from Sinai into Gaza, and then to attack Jews in Israel. Now, they're having their own problems because Arabs and Muslims fighting each other, Muslims fighting each other. That does not mean one group of Muslims is good and the other group of Muslims is bad. That doesn't mean that. When one group of Muslims defeats the other group, that the winner will then turn on the Jews. That will always happen. And the Egyptian television and Egyptian news media has not stopped for 1 minute with their Nazi propaganda against the Jewish people, praising Hitler, praising the Holocaust on Egyptian television. Now they're doing things like that, right now. So the Sinai has already been taken over by the Egyptian army. And I'm glad that they're having problems. The more problems, the better. God willing, they should all kill each other. Yimach shmam v'zichram. Thank you, Gimatria. And we go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss the following prophets. 1, Amos. Okay. Amos was a prophet who condemned the mistreatment. He spoke about many issues, but one of the issues that he stood out about was he condemned the mistreatment of average Jews, ordinary Jews, by the wealthy establishment elite, which is something we in our movement do in Israel. You've got the wealthy establishment elite, the Jewish billionaires, the Jews who own the news media, the Jews who run the education establishment, the Jews who control the army and everything else in Israel. They oppress the other Jews. They mistreat the other Jews. They persecute the other Jews. They tax the other Jews to death while they themselves pay little or nothing in taxes. They expel the other Jews from the land of Israel. They allow the other Jews to be slaughtered by Muslim terrorists or by illegal aliens from Africa. So Amos was thousands of years ago already speaking out against the establishment criminals and charlatans that took over, that became the leaders of Israel. And we have the same problem today, that oppress the average Jews, that oppress the average Jew that lives in the land of Israel. That's one of the things Amos spoke out against. The mistreatment of average Jews by the wealthy, powerful elitists. And now EB22 writes, asks about 2. Hosea. Okay. How do you say that in English? Hosea? In Hebrew, it's Hosea. Okay. Hosea urged Hashem, one of the more famous things that he did, he urged Hashem to replace Israel with another nation. He said, look, Israel, they're sinful, they've committed all these sins. He wanted Hashem to replace Israel with another nation. Hashem was very angry over this commandment, and he commanded Hosea to marry a prostitute. A prostitute. He commanded him to do it. And so Hosea married the prostitute, had children with the prostitute, or he thought maybe they're his children. He couldn't never be sure because it was a prostitute, so he couldn't be sure, are they his children or were someone else's children? And then when the children grew older, when the children, 5 years old, 6 years old, 10 years old, when the children were already adolescents, Hashem told Hosea to expel them from his home. Throw them out of your house now. And Hosea didn't want to throw his children out of his house, even though they were the children of a prostitute, even though he wasn't absolutely sure they were his children. He didn't want to throw them out. He begged Hashem to have mercy. He begged him to have compassion. He didn't want to expel them because he loved them, because he raised them. And you love children when you raise children. You love the children. And so Hashem said to him, taught him a lesson here and said, you see, even though they're the children of prostitutes, even though you're not even sure if they're all your children, but you still love them. You raise them, you're with them all this time, and you still love them. That's the way I feel about Israel, Hashem said. I will never abandon Israel. I will always love Israel. So Hosea, he got the message. He got the message. Anyway, thank you, EB22. I think that they were both very inspiring prophets. Of course, all the prophets in the Tanakh, in the Bible, are very inspiring. Thank you, EB. We go now to Black Sabbath, who writes, and I quote, "What do you think of Rachel Maddow?" Unquote. She's such an obnoxious lesbian animal. And, you know, she's an admitted lesbian. Very, very obnoxious. Just a hypocrite, a leftist, a phony. She has her show. For those of you who don't know, she has a show on MSNBC. Many of you may not know about it because she has no ratings. And MSNBC has no ratings. She's just the scum of the earth, like all of the hosts on MSNBC. She twists and distorts everything on her program, distorts all the facts to promote all the evil people that are destroying American society. Thank you, Black Sabbath. And we go now to Kalman Ben Menachem. Reb Chaim, in your opinion, what are the big differences in the worldview, personality, and character of Ashkenazim and Sfaradim? Thank you, unquote. there were big differences in that the Sfaradim were more religious, more traditional. They were less influenced because the Europeans were influenced. The European Jews, the Ashkenazim, were influenced by the university world and the secular world and even the communist and socialist world in Europe. And so the Sfaradim tended to be more religious, more connected to Jewish traditions. The Sfaradim also, since many of them, most of them came from Muslim countries, were much more hawkish and much more right-wing because they lived under Arabs and Muslims, and so they knew what Arabs and Muslims are all about. But now, you know, those were the differences. And so the Sfaradim tended to support, be much more supportive of Rabbi Kahana and of right-wing philosophy. Those differences are beginning to blur now because Ashkenazim and Sfaradim are intermarrying. I don't know if I should use the word intermarry, but I mean, I come from a marriage like that. My family, my father, Alav HaShalom, he should rest in peace, was an Ashkenazi Jew from Poland, and my mother, of course, is Sfaradia, is a Sephardic Jew. From Egyptian and Moroccan, some from part of the family from Egypt, part of the family from Morocco, Sephardic background. And this is true of many, many marriages now in Israel, very high percentage of marriages now in Israel. So you're beginning to see less and less of the differences we used to have. But some of those differences still exist, and the Sephardim still tend to be more right-wing, more religious, more tied to Jewish traditions. And so they're still a big constituency of ours. There's certain groups that are more attracted to our philosophy. The Sephardim, the Jews from the former Soviet Union, the Russian Jews, they tend to be more attracted to our philosophy. And of course, the religious Jews and most of the Jews in Judea and Samaria are Ashkenazim. Most of the Jewish settlers are Ashkenazim. So, of course, there are many great Ashkenazi Jews. But there's certain segments of the population that are more attracted to our message. And I would say the Sephardim are one of those groups. Thank you, Kalman Ben Menachem. And I want to thank everybody for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, Shalom.